Do you think grade inflation is a problem? Do you think too many college students are given higher grades for their academic work than they really deserve? Our guest this hour is a college professor who admits to being a grade inflator, and he'll tell us why he doesn't see a problem with it. And we'll wonder if you agree or not. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July 2nd. What, if anything, is wrong with a college professor giving most students in his or her class an A or a B? Do students really benefit more from a hard grader? If you're a college professor, and I know some are listening now, do you also admit to being a grade inflator? If you're a college student, or were a college student, will you admit to benefiting from, or maybe you were harmed from, a grade inflator? Let us know your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Oliver Lee Bateman, an assistant professor at the University of Texas at Arlington in the History Department. He wrote an article for The Atlantic, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Jillian. How are you?
I'm good. So what prompted your confession?
Well, it's never a great idea when you're early in your career to confess to your colleagues that you're a grade inflator to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But as someone who is new on the tenure track, I mean, I'm in my third year of teaching there, you find yourself thinking all the time about the realities of the university that you're in, of American university system generally. And in writing this piece for The Atlantic, I wanted to talk about grade inflation. I wanted to talk about my role in it. And I wanted to talk about how I'm confessing to it that's true. The grades I give are higher than the grades humanities professors were giving in the 1960s. But the dynamics of going to college have changed greatly. We're in a really confused situation right now. The university is expensive. It's a very expensive place. Students pay or take out loans for a great deal of money to sit in my classes. And I, as an instructor, go out of my way to do a good job of lecturing to them, a good job of presenting to them, a good job as best I can of trying to hold their attention. And what I really try to do in the article, what I talk about in the article, is that I also go out of my way not to fail them, not to penalize them unduly in this system that they're paying so much money to be there. They're, you know, struggling to get these certificates for various reasons, and they're entering the world in a different context even than I did when I graduated from college in 2001. It's a really, really tough situation to be in, and that's just part of the problem.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
I was going to say you write in the article and that you benefited from, or you were a student who had inflated grades from your professors when you were going to school.
I feel that was the case, yes. I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I had a lot of wonderful professors there, a lot of great mentors, a lot of people who helped shape and steer me toward my current career. But I don't think that they were especially harsh on the written work that I was turning in at that time. I think in many cases they might have, you know, marked up the paper considerably and then put a high grade at the end of it. I don't think that they tried to punish or discourage me. And I think that, you know, looking at grade averages at other places, Yale College recently, and looking at how its undergrads were doing, I think in 2012, some study or survey that they conducted, you can read about it in their alumni magazine, found that 62% of the undergraduates there received A or A minus grades. I've never taught a class where the A rate's been that high.
Yeah.
62%.
Well, maybe kids today just are, you know, a lot smarter than we were.
Some people have said that's a possibility. Some of the professors interviewed at Yale when asked about that high rate said that. They said, you know, a lot of these kids work really hard. They're earning their A's and B's. I feel that a lot of my students, when they earn A's and B's, and I would say that probably 40 to 45% of the students that I grade in my junior, senior level classes fall into that category. I would say that they do try. They do good work. But there's still, you know, clear deficiencies in what they're doing, and I try to bring that to their attention through editing, I'm the school's moot court coach, so I coach the legal debate team as well. I try to critique them there. I try to help build their skill set there outside of the classroom. But I don't feel that I'm in a situation where I can grade people the way I would like to grade them to keep humanity standards as high as conceivably possible. And in the Atlantic article, I point out that I'm fine with that because I understand that the mission of the university has evolved into this kind of unusual thing where more people go from high school now than before, even if graduation rates haven't shifted up at the public universities as much as we would like them to. So I recognize that my role is changing, and there's a lot of conflict there. A lot of young professors, I think, and a lot of professors who've been there a long time are thinking about that. And it's an issue, especially in the humanities, because we unfortunately serve a lot of times as an area where students go when they find themselves struggling in science, technology, engineering, and math classes, where research shows that grade inflation has occurred at a much slower rate since the 1970s.
Yeah, you point out, though, that it's easier to, you know, give somebody a D or an F if they make a mistake on a hard science question, but it's not as clear-cut if someone's writing in an essay on a philosophical question.
Yes, that's absolutely the case. I think that that's something that the humanities struggles with. And I think that you know, you can give someone a chemistry test and see, you know, based on the problems that you assign and the way you've prepared them, you know, they'll get B's, C's, D's, A's at a certain rate. But if you've prepared your class reasonably well to answer questions about, you know, the origins of judicial review in the United States, or substantive due process in the 20th century, and they're not. You can kind of grade them on their ability to regurgitate information about that, but to make the humanities work at this higher level, you have to be able to grade the ideas that they present as well, and it's a struggle to do that as a teacher of undergraduates. It's a tremendous struggle because you can see some of them, you know, one out of 10 maybe really grasping and getting at these higher ideas. You can see that there. And you want to engage back and forth with them. And you do a lot of that out of class if you can, you know, during office hours, or if they're on the moot court team with me, I can do this. But I can't grade them and engage with them and critique them the way, you know, someone might have at Oxford or Cambridge when they were, tutoring some junior scholar. You know, I can't do that. I'm left to grade them the best that I can in a way that just sort of evaluates what they're doing. And it's a real struggle.
Yeah. Well,
not just for me, but for a lot of folks in my shoes.
Well, let me have you address, though, the people who think this is a problem to give students A's and B's when they don't deserve A's and B's, that the student then isn't really prepared for the real world. The student has an inflated sense of how
how smart they are or their own academic abilities, that that it's just not, it's not helping the student to say, hey, yeah, you're extraordinary, here's an A, when they're not.
Well, I thought about that too, and you know, for one thing, it is true, you know, students a lot of times, and I encounter them, especially ones that have grade disputes with me, you know, they've received A along the lines, perhaps from complaining, perhaps just, you know, they've come up from a high school now that a high school model that seems to be built around this bizarre notion of 100% excellence, you know, 100% excellence, kind of undermining the meaning of the word excellence. And they come in and they have these grades and they want these high grades. And sometimes they earn them. Sometimes they'll work hard enough to earn them. And then if you were, let's say, to really fight it out with one student, you know, really fight it out, you know, hold the line on a D as opposed to a C. I have never had that situation, never had that fight. But if you, I've known colleagues and people when I was a graduate student who sometimes had these fights, you know, really holding the line on the D over the C. You might teach that student a lesson, you know, you might think that you've taught them a lesson, but then you think the student might have other things going on in his life, the student might mean well, the student might be getting such and such a GPA from your school when Yale is giving out 62% A's.
Yeah.
When I went to law school before I got my PhD, we encountered this because, you know, my school had a lower GPA median than, you know, more elite universities did, more elite law schools did. So you'd have people coming out of the University of Virginia with like 3.7s that were the equivalent of 3.5s at different schools. And it's very confusing. It's almost an arms race in terms of GPAs. If the higher schools are giving higher GPAs and students want to put GPAs on resumes, you know, regardless of whether employers look at them, all of this stuff is going to come together, and that's part of the issue. The other part of that is if you're in that dispute, you know, and you're fighting over that D or C with a student, you as the professor, and this is what another author who published a piece in Slate said, who is an adjunct at different universities. She said if she really fought them out over the grades, in these disputes, she couldn't get her own work done.
Yeah.
She couldn't possibly complete all the other things the school was asking of her. And she might, you know, her performance is even more contingent on student reviews than mine is. She might not be coming back to teach in the fall. And that's really a tough thing to think about, too. For the people that aren't on the tenure track, their jobs in a lot of cases are really contingent on pleasing the students. And they aren't even paid to give as much time as I can give being able to do all this service work with students.
Let me remind listeners that we are talking about grade inflation with our guest, Oliver Lee Bateman, an assistant professor at the University of Texas at Arlington. He wrote an article for The Atlantic, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor, talking about why he is a grade inflator. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your own experiences. Do you think that this is a problem? Do you think that college kids today get grades that they really didn't earn? And do you think that's an issue? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with the author of a piece in The Atlantic, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor. Oliver Lee Bateman is an assistant professor at the University of Texas at Arlington in the History Department. And we have callers who are waiting, so let's go to Victor in Milwaukee. Hello, Victor.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. I'm very concerned about this. When you grade inflate, basically what you're doing is you're telling a lie. You're setting a young person's esteem up for failure and depression. And think about this. They're going through high school. You're telling them they're doing well. They try to apply to a college. They sign up for the wrong classes. The instructors are not going to have a lot of patience with them. They feel as though that they're not adequate. They'll drop out, and you have another problem.
Yeah,
here's
Victor,
the other issue.
Let me just interrupt, though, Victor. I think our guest is saying, too, he's at the college level. And what about at the college level as opposed to high school?
Well, Joy, it begins at the high school level, and it transfers to the college level. It's a problem. The other issue is they've applied for these grants and these student aids and loans and everything, and it becomes a waste of money, and it becomes a waste of taxpayer money. So I think it's wrong,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
Well, what about that, Oliver?
Victor says two things there that are really important. The first is that high school standards have changed a great deal since, the Bush administration, the W. Bush administration became, much more heavily interested in testing standards, et cetera, and, achieving 100% excellence at all costs. So we have these students that come in, and I think that they are much more accustomed, even than I was in the early 90s in high school, much more accustomed to receiving easy grades or 100% grades on tests. So traditional college classes are a challenge for them in a way they weren't even for people from previous generations. The other thing he says that's really important, and it's really scary to me just as a citizen and a taxpayer, is that if students aren't retained because they struggle so much in their classes or because they're, completely failed and shoved out the door, but they've taken out $20,000 or $25,000 in federal student loans, then they contribute even more than someone who graduates with $40,000 or $60,000 in federal student loans, but can at least use his bachelor's degree as a certificate to help find a job. This person has $20,000 in student loans and no college education. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrifying prospect. And the system, with its high costs right now, with the problems in high school, it really is something that needs to be reformed. And the only way that I could see to make it fairer, and no one would go for it, would be to make public universities, great universities like the University of Wisconsin system, to make them free and open to everybody, to make them no cost other than maybe paying for your room and board, and then to aggressively try to make students who can't make the cut leave, but after getting that experience in college.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, Oliver, but that's one of the reasons why you admit to inflating grades in college, is that the high school kids that are there may not be as prepared as they should be, and you're reluctant to fail them.
A lot of times they fail themselves because they don't show up for the exams. My fail rates aren't great because students simply don't turn in work after taking their federal loans. And the government is actually tightening that up. We now get forms every semester. Did this student ever attend? We have a high fail, this high fail rates just for that. But I do go out of my way. If a student is struggling in the D range, I try to find ways to help him or her reach the C range. Mm-hmm. Because to be producing D's at a university, when you need a 2.0 to graduate, my wife is an academic advisor and works in retention, and you'll find students with 90 credit hours under their belts and like 1.8 GPAs, and it's going to be a struggle to get them to the finish line. They might have thousands of dollars invested. So I try to keep that in mind, but it is a struggle, and it's a crisis of conscience, because you have these standards, you grew up with these traditions, and you want to uphold them as much as you can, but you are in a compromised system,
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm trying to, though, you're helping a student get from a D level to a C level. But I'm not sure if that's really grade inflating. That's you trying to help a student get from a D level to a C level. So are you really a grade inflating professor?
I think in the modern sense, yes. I think those of us who are doing this, who are going the extra mile to help students who are pushing hard at the upper range of the B to become A's, I think that we're doing
I think we might be losing our signal with you, Oliver Lee Bateman. We will we'll just kind of reconnect since we have news coming up anyway. We are talking with Oliver Lee Bateman, assistant professor at the University of Texas at Arlington in the History Department, who wrote an article for The Atlantic, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor, talking about this practice of grade inflation, where students are receiving higher grades than they really deserve. And whether that's an issue or not, our guest is telling us why he does it and why it's done, and that he really doesn't see a huge issue with it. Do you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll get to more of your calls in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you think students get higher grades than they deserve for their academic work, you're not alone. We are talking about the issue of grade inflation this hour with a guest professor who tells us why he thinks it's happening and why he himself is a grade inflator. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Wednesday, July 2nd. We are talking with the author of a piece in The Atlantic, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor, and we wonder if you agree or disagree with his defense of the practice. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think that most college kids are getting higher grades than they deserve? Do you think you or your children benefited from or maybe were hurt by grade inflation? Let us know what you think about the issue. Our guest is Oliver Lee Bateman, an assistant professor in the University of Texas at Arlington in the History Department. We have put his piece, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor, on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, let's go back to the phones. Rockwell in Madison is with us. Hello, Rockwell.
Hello. I just had a comment. When I was in graduate school, I had a teacher on the first day of class who walked in and he said, kind of gave a disclaimer, and he said, you know, I'm not going to grade on a curve. I don't inflate grades. If you get an A, you earned an A. If you get an F, you earn that F. And I just felt like, you know, even to this day, that's one of the classes that I remember working the hardest in and one of the teachers that I had the most respect for because he just set the tone and everybody worked. And, you know, in all fairness, I haven't read the piece that the guest wrote, but a lot of the things that I'm hearing about why they inflate grades, you know, other universities have higher A rates or whatever, it really has nothing to do with the personal education. It's all like numbers and the teacher wanting to retain students and the university wanting students. But there's a personal responsibility to each student from their teachers. And that's what education is about. And I just feel like this idea of grade inflation is more about business and people keeping their jobs. And I think that that's just really unfortunate. And, you know, I think it is going to be, I think it absolutely is a huge problem because it doesn't prepare people.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rockwell. Well, Oliver, what do you say to that?
I think that his point is a valid one. I had instructors over the years, not all of them, some who would immediately say, you know, this is going to be a difficult class and you're going to work a lot. And some would do exactly as he said. You would receive rigorous feedback. Your grade would be what you earn. In other cases, you know, this was the work of someone who was clearly malicious, and your grade never reflected the work that you did, and they were simply trying to get to sow dissent among the graduate students or to anger them or to do these sorts of things.
So it cuts both ways. There were also professors I had who would just assign A's to everyone in the class, but then spend hours slaving over a grad student's paper for a journal, editing it, walking back and forth with him, spending hours in the office, you know, going over this point or that point, and reinforcing the notion that a lot of times much meaningful learning occurs outside the formal perimeter of the classroom. You know, so it works both ways. And it's the grade is a lot of times without, you know, there is this personal responsibility, and that can mean any number of things. It can mean trying to save a student who's in danger of failing the class and devoting a lot of time to that. It can mean imposing a hard standard for the class and ensuring that they all work toward it. But there are these other things that I think we all do keep in mind, and they're not necessarily impersonal, because, you know, the notion of students leaving school with tremendous debt, or students who are sort of set adrift in the university setting, it's a terrible thing as well. So there's all this stuff weighs on you. And then for adjuncts, for the people that aren't aren't progressing toward tenure, aren't on the tenure stream, who are so dependent on student evaluations and so undercompensated, I don't know how they're able to do it at all. I mean, some of them, and I know some of them who were able to do what the caller said, who were able to both impose a hard standard and work with them, but there are limits to everything, you know, and it's ultimately, any job, you know, a number doesn't matter. It's what you as the person put into it. It's what you as the person, as the instructor, give to the students. And if you can make time to improve their work, whether you assign a high mark or a low mark to it, if you can see that gain, if you can interact with them, if you can touch that student in an important way, then I think you've been successful. If you're just assigning A's, if you're just going down the grade roll at the end of the semester and marking A, then that's not grade inflation necessarily. That's just, you know, rank negligence, and it does happen. You know, it happens with people who are, a lot of times with adjuncts, who are harried or overworked. You know, there's horror stories of just everybody being assigned A, and that is pure negligence. The inflation of the sort that I'm talking about is the sort of thing that, you know, my father, when he got his bachelor's degree in the 50s, you know, was a 2.0 student at West Virginia University. You know, and he was an athlete there, but he earned his 2.0, in other words, by being an average student who probably today would be a B student. Yeah. By our standards.
I'm trying to get a handle on how much of a grade inflator you are, Oliver Lee Bateman. Helping a student get from a D to a C, as you mentioned in the last half hour, doesn't sound like grade inflation. That sounds like a professor, you know, doing his or her job to help this student learn.
You know, I think it's a tough call. You know, it's a tough call as to how you characterize that, because, you know, one person's efforts to find extra credit for students or regrade papers is another person's grade inflation. Another person who wants to draw a really hard standard, a really hard line in the sand.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
that's the whole thing. Like in the humanities, it's really tough, because what is an A? You know, if you have nine Plato level philosophers in a class, how do you sort out who gets? And you know, you really want to be hard on them. How do you sort out who gets the A in there? Yeah.
Do you give students an A when they, you know, maybe they are pretty darn good, but you do it because you really don't want to hassle with them arguing over whether they really got a B or an A?
I think that there have been instances where students have been persistent enough to push an 88, an 89 into a 90. You know, when you're reading their last essay or something, and you know they've come to enough office hours, they've done enough things, and you hear from them. But at the same time, in that same class, there might be one student who so far excelled everybody else that, In a fair universe, that would really be the only student that you would want to pass from the class. You know what I mean? That would be the only student you would say who really got the material.
Let's take another call from Erica in Oak Creek. Hello, Erica.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. So what do you think about grade inflation?
I've always been a good student. I've always gotten A's and B's all throughout high school. And when I started college, and I'm in college now, so we just got out in May, and I got my final grade report. And in two of my classes, I know that I honestly 100% earned the A's. I worked my butt off and did all my work. And in the other two classes, specifically one, I ended up getting an A. And I know that I did not earn it because half the time I wasn't there. Because when I got my first test back, he would show the grade that you actually got, which my first test I got a D on, which I love negative, well, not really negative feedback, but I love knowing that I'm struggling so that I can work on that. And then my actual grade was a B+ because he had curved it or something like that. And I just kind of felt cheated because I realized that I wasn't doing the work well. But then at the same time, it's like it didn't really matter. And so I was talking to a couple of the people in the class, and they're like, yeah, we just don't really go because what does it matter? Like, it doesn't matter if you learn it or not. You're still going to pass. And I just feel like, maybe it's lazy or something, but it just, I mean, it's not really helping me, seeing as I need to pass the class. I don't want to just be given a free pass. I want to be able to earn it. And as a seeker of knowledge, like, I want to learn the material, but it's like at the same time, I'm just not interested in something if it's not going to be honest with me.
Yeah. And Eric, I'm sorry. I'm trying to understand this professor on your first test said, well, you really got a D because he had, you know, whatever, so many wrong on this thing. But I'm going to give you a B+. I don't get it. What, he actually was saying you got a D based on your performance, but I'm going to give you a B?
Yeah, it was, I don't know, some teachers do, they grade on curves so that.
Oh, I see.
So, I'm not really sure how that helps anybody because the people who did really well, they still did really well. But the people who didn't do really well, they're made to believe that they did really well. And it's not really helping anybody in the long run.
Yeah. So do you understand that professor's practice, Oliver?
Was this a large class or a small class, like in terms of the number of students?
It was probably about 50 students.
See, this is another issue. I mean, if it's a class that builds into subsequent classes, these kind of practices are problematic, you know. If the students aren't picking up the material and aren't being incentivized to pick it up, that's problematic. However, there's also an element of if you know that you're going to take classes after the prerequisite of you know, knowing that you might need to motivate yourself to either force the instructor to educate you through office hours, to grab a hold of that instructor and demand help, or to take a different instructor if you have time in your schedule to do that. But it is something that if the person is too lenient and also doesn't make sure the material's being conveyed, that's another instance. I wouldn't call it grade inflation. I would call it negligence on the part of the instructor.
Yeah. So, well, let's take a break and wonder if other listeners have any experiences that they would like to share. So do you think grade inflation is an issue? Did you ever receive a grade in college that you didn't earn? Or do you think kids today are earning A's and B's when they don't really deserve A's and B's? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with college professor. He is an assistant professor of history at the University of Texas at Arlington, Oliver Lee Bateman, and he is the author of a recent article in The Atlantic, Confessions of a Grade Inflating Professor. And we're welcoming your questions and experiences and views for him on the issue of grade inflation. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Oliver, What is your justification for inflating grades?
Well, at this point, I am, you know, someone working in an occupation that has changed greatly from the 1950s and the 1960s. Beginning in the 1970s, grades go up. I came of age in a system where the grades were inflated. I got higher grades than I would have undoubtedly had I gone to school in the 1950s. I mean, if you looked at the Supreme Court in the 1970s, you had justices on the court like William Brennan and Harry Blackmun, who were C students in law school, yet were intelligent people. But they received average marks. And I'm in a situation where I have students who pay high rates, not as high rates as they do at private schools. To be here, I have students who are, we enroll far more people than ever before, you know, from a broader segment of society, many of whom wouldn't have met the criteria, you know, for going to school in the 50s, would have struggled in the 50s. And I have had to accommodate that reality. And I understand it. I understand the university's purpose has changed. But I also am aware of what has been lost as that's gone on. So I understand it. I understand how it's changed. And I can't enforce the strict standards of these sort of great lions of the academy of the 1950s who were capable of crushing students, failing them out, and that sort of thing. Yeah. I can't do that. I can't, in good conscience, do that.
Do you need to have good student reviews and I don't know a good record of instructing students who are above average in order to get your contract renewed?
I mean, for people who are on the tenure track, research is important and teaching is important. So both of those things are important. So you have to balance those things. You know, how much time am I spending working on my book manuscript versus how much time am I preparing my lectures and you know, helping the teaching assistant grade papers or grading papers in my other class? How much time am I doing each of these different things? But at every institution, even the most research-intensive institution, teaching evaluations matter to a certain extent. We'd all be lying if they didn't. And I don't think that there are many folks who teach toward getting the highest evaluation. I don't think there are many people who just go in there and want the students to love them. I don't believe that's the case, especially among folks who have, you know, very high research loads as well.
I have a caller who wanted to talk about this issue, so let me bring him into the conversation. James and Wapan, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you pretty much asked my question. I know that my professors, they do have their results, and whether they're on a tenure track or not, the student reviews are taken into account whether or not they get tenure.
Yeah, and another listener, Matt, says that he's wondering if there's more grade inflation as more low-paid adjunct professors are used to teach. He thinks that because their jobs are more tied to student evaluations, the adjunct professors, they are more likely to inflate grades. A reaction to that?
Yes, that's absolutely the case. There's a wonderful piece in Guernica magazine by Rachel Reeder, an adjunct in New York, who talks about that and more or less concedes that that's happening. And it does happen because they only teach, they're paid so very little, and those evaluations are often the sole determinant for bringing them back. So it's almost assuredly the case that this is causing a, you know, not so much even inflation as negligence in grading, as just extremely high grading. And sometimes the students don't know, as more and more adjuncts teach at the universities, you know, which instructors are which, or, you know, they use these services online to sort among, like Rate My Professor, to sort among who the easiest professors are. And it is unfortunate in that sense. I do think that the increasing
size of the contingent labor force at the university, that's going to drive grades up even more in the next 20 or 30 years. And that's going to be an even bigger problem than the grade inflation from the 1950s to the present. It's going to be a tremendous problem.
Vicki in Janesville is with us. Hello, Vicki.
Good morning. Hi. I guess my inflation, it was more of a kind of a grading on the curve type of situation. I went to a large university for undergrad, and my freshman calculus class was taught by a teaching assistant. There was probably a couple of thousand of us freshmen taking it throughout the university, and I think it was kind of what we call the weed-out class. The first exam, I think the mean or the median score for all the freshmen taking the exam was like a 30%, and that's about what I got. And then I ended up with a C in the class, which is not a 30%. So I just thought it was very interesting that they were using the a curve and such to inflate the grades, even though it was somewhat of, I guess, a weed-out class for the engineers in the university.
Interesting. All right. Thanks very much, Vicki, for sharing that story. Do you have a response to that, Oliver?
You know, only the things are going to get even stranger. People can go online and read about what some universities are experimenting with now that have these large 1,000-person classes, which is actually just having random people at home with bachelor's degrees grading people using pre-written rubrics. They'll just like slap a rubric response, like a pre-written response to a paper, slap a grade on it and send it back. Some universities are outsourcing the actual grading to not even like affiliated individuals, large state universities. There's a place in Florida I was reading about doing this. This is one of the new trends.
Well, we have just a minute to go, so I'll ask you to be brief. What's the answer to the problems that people perceive with grade inflation?
If you left it up to me, in a perfect world, I would make the university free and open to all comers, but I would also make it very selective in that first year so that while they weren't spending any money, they have to work very hard to get to the next level, to get to the next year. But it doesn't seem like our policymakers are willing to invest that much money in higher education. They're preferring to have students pay for it or finance it using loans and creating a situation where they're almost like customers.
Yeah. So if we're not going to get free higher education, is there anything that should be done about this in the meantime?
I think that one thing that we should do is, as long as the university is in this situation that it's in, we instructors should try to make the most of it and recognize where a lot of our students who might not come from backgrounds like us are coming from and try to help them as much as we can.
It's a good way
That doesn't necessarily mean being like, just giving them A's, but at least trying to accommodate them.
Thank you so much for being with us. Oliver Lee Bateman is an assistant professor of history at the University of Texas at Arlington. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.